This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guests in studio are Hugh Sharman, who's the founder and principal of Incoteco in Denmark, which is an international energy consulting firm. Also with me in studio is Martin Aurup, an economist and chief executive officer of CEPOS, an independent Danish public policy organization. They're here to weigh in on one of the major debates here in Washington, and that's over energy reform legislation. It's being overshadowed right now by the healthcare debate, but in just a few weeks, we'll be seeing a major piece of legislation produced by the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. President Obama, of course, is in favor of energy reform legislation known as cap and trade. And one of the things he says we need to do is develop alternative sources of energy to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. One of the things he has promoted over the last few months is wind power as well as solar and biofuels. In terms of the wind power, he says the perfect model is Denmark, which now gets 20% of its energy through its wind producing program. And gentlemen, you have studied this very carefully. Like I just said, the president claims that one-fifth of Danish energy comes through wind power. Martin, is that accurate?
Oh, that's actually wrong. We get 10% of our energy consumption through wind power. The problem is that the discrepancy between the 20% and the 10% is the wind energy that we need to export, because the problem with wind is that it is not necessarily produced when there is a demand. The wind blows as the wind blows. This means that in many situations we have excess energy that we don't know what to do with, because energy storage is still, electricity storage, I should say, is still a technical issue that is unresolved. So we end up, as consumers in Denmark, subsidizing electricity production by windmills by a 50% premium on top of the market price, and exporting the very same electricity to German and Norwegian consumers at rock-bottom prices.
And what has been the reaction in Denmark? Is this something that consumers are okay with, or is there great frustration as a result of this?
This is something that's gone more or less unnoticed until now, the study that we came out with just a few days ago.
And Hugh, describe how you got involved in this study. How has it affected your organization?
I am, of course, an outsider, mm-hmm. and I went spectacularly bankrupt in my own terms by trying to promote wind energy in the 1970s. So, of course, I was interested in a successful example, and I've been living in Denmark now for 20-odd years, and I've watched the growth of the whole wind system. And one thing that struck me is that we could only integrate so much wind energy in Denmark if we had enormous electricity stores. And in fact, that is the nature of our relationship with Norway and Sweden, both of which are replete with enormous amounts of hydropower. You can turn hydropower up and down. And of course, we send our surplus wind energy northwards to Scandinavia. This gives them not only cheap energy, but it also gives them an excuse not to do anything expensive for themselves in building the new capacity they badly need to build.
How do the energy rates in Denmark compare to your neighbors, as not only the countries you export your energy to, but throughout the continent?
Denmark has the highest energy prices of Europe and probably of the whole world, I should think.
Yeah.
And that is not because of the production of electricity by coal, etc., is more expensive. It's because of the taxation that is put on electricity production in Denmark.
How long has wind power been a focal point of Danish energy production, and what was the source before that?
20 years. We built everything in the last 20 years, effectively. And Denmark has been in an energy revolution really since about 1973, when we were hit very badly by the first oil crisis, and then by the second oil crisis in 1979. So the Danes are super sensitive to the issue of being reliant on one major source of primary energy, oil in this case, successfully switched over from oil to coal. And we have the most efficient and finest coal power stations in the world in Denmark. But I think we've gone overboard in building so much additional capacity in gas and wind that we now produce far more energy anyway than we actually need. And we're about to produce another tranche of more of wind energy all of which will be sold for less than the cost.
In terms of the storage capacity, is that something that can be addressed, or is that just a problem that forces you to export at prices that doesn't really help the bottom line in Denmark?
I'm very, very active in electricity storage, in fact, but it is a nascent technology. It's just being born today, and it won't be able to make a major contribution for perhaps another 5 or 10 years. But yes, electricity storage is what makes wind energy reliable and available.
So, Martin, what do you see as the lessons of this experiment with wind power in Denmark? Can it be improved upon, or was it wrong to head in that direction in such a significant way?
It was wrong to head in that direction in such a significant way, and it would be wrong for the U.S. to think that the Danish experience can be copied to the extent that it's a good idea to copy it, because it's very expensive for electricity consumers in Denmark. It doesn't create any extra jobs. The subsidy is between 175 and 250% of what the actual value of the job is in terms of the wage it's paying. So that's a bad deal. And the U.S. does not have Norway nearby, it is not the way the Danes handle this, albeit very expensive for the Danish consumers, cannot be replicated by the U.S. So you can't just vamp up electricity production to 20% of your wind electricity production to 20% of total electricity consumption. You need new technology to do it, and it would be very, very expensive, and it's very uncertain how the problem should be solved with the stochastic nature of wind energy.
So is it smarter then to just not go down that route at all, or is it smarter to lay down the infrastructure before making such a huge investment in that direction?
Well, I think you have to be very careful not to. Whenever the government steps in and starts subsidizing things, you get a market distortion, and you need to be very, very careful not to create something that is actually not going to work, because the market has a way of finding solutions that actually work. So I'd use the market mechanism and look at small government subsidies of research and development.
What's the focus in Denmark in terms of the overall issue of climate change? Is there the same stress that there is in America on reducing the so-called carbon footprint and global warming and so forth? How do the experts, how do the public generally react to this issue?
This is a huge issue in Denmark, and we actually have a climate minister in Denmark.
I think we have a czar. Keep going.
Yes, that's right. Yes. She doesn't actually know how to control climate yet, but maybe she's working on it. I don't know. you may know, Denmark is hosting the climate summit in December of this year, and therefore there's a huge emphasis on climate change. And right now, it's very, very difficult to get through with sort of rational, market-oriented approaches where you weigh in both costs and benefits. There is a lot of irrational thinking going on, and it's very, very difficult to get politicians' attention to the costs of doing what they are insisting on is necessary to do.
Why is that, Hugh? Let me throw the question to you. Why do you think there's so little interest right now in Denmark and in some cases here in America for a market-based approach to dealing with our energy needs?
That's a good question. The issue of so-called climate change is expressible only in what you might say are religious terms. The argument from the people who say that climate change is the most pressing issue of our time is that we must press on with every possible way of reducing CO2 emissions. Our study shows that wind energy is a very poor and very expensive way of reducing CO2 emissions.
In terms of this conference now, this will be the final question coming up in Copenhagen, and I'll start with Martin, and Hugh, you can add your thoughts in a moment if you wish to. The conference coming up in Copenhagen, you mentioned there's going to be a lot of urgency to move forward in a global way on climate change policy. What is your worst-case scenario coming out of that conference in terms of an agreement? What's your best-case scenario?
I think the worst-case scenario is one where you get a global deal rationing energy use, and subsidizing a sort of planned approach to which energy composition and which energy technologies and solutions should be the ones in place in the future. I mean, it's central planning, and it's not going to work. And the really, really scary scenario is actually the fact that when something like this that happens and governments start subsidizing things, you get all kinds of interests and rent seekers moving in. You get businesses trying to get protection from competition from abroad using carbon as an excuse. You get in third world countries that don't have the rule of law, you get all kinds of corruption issues going on. And basically, what really scares me is not so much the rationing itself. That's scary enough, but it's the way this could evolve into this could be this recession's version of the the protectionism that rose out of the 29 crisis. I mean, history never replicates itself, but there are certain patterns, and this could be the way we get protectionism this way around, environmental protectionism, and that's really scary.
Mm. On the other hand, I'd say that the chances of it succeeding are very small. So the worst case scenario is also a remote scenario. I think the likeliest outcome is total failure, however well disguised politically.
That's always a challenge. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being in studio with me. We greatly appreciate it. Happy to be joined here by Hugh Sharman, founder and principal of Incoteco in Denmark, an international energy consulting firm. Martin Auerup is an economist and chief executive officer at CEPOS, an independent Danish public policy organization. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.